News Talk 790 KFYO 709 with Tom Collins and Laura Mack. Interesting, Laura. Sandra has always been good to when you were unavailable. Of course, when you had your mastectomy and all that treatment and all that stuff, Sandra was like...
So good to come in for me. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
You were like Queen Truly. Tut. But anyway, you were here yesterday, Queen Tut. You
know, I don't know either. Like,
I mean, she was top of the heap, is what I was trying to say.
Top of the heap. Well, that doesn't sound very nice either, does it?
It's better than bottom of the heap, but
I guess so.
It's okay.
Top of the heap, bottom of the shoe.
I'll take it.
Anyway, Sandra was here under one pretense yesterday, but she's here under another today. Mm-hmm. Sandra, let's have it.
Well, I'm announcing today that I am seeking the Republican nomination for District 83, Texas House of Representatives. When Charles Perry removes himself from the ballot, I would like to be the selection of the committee that's going to choose our nominee for the Republican Party.
Well, bully.
Well, all righty then.
Yeah.
So what is the process?
Well, it's interesting. The public will not have a vote in this case. The people who are going to decide who replaces Charles Perry on the ballot are the seven county chairs of the counties in District 83 for the Republican Party.
And those counties are?
Those counties are Borden, Lubbock, Lynn, Scurry, Terry, Mitchell, and Gaines.
Yeah, good thing you didn't have a Perry moment there. A Rick Perry moment.
A Rick Perry moment. And the third one is, it's on the tip of my tongue.
It's so easy to do if you're nervous. But so there are potentially seven votes. Now, what I've learned in the past couple weeks is that Borden County apparently has no county chairman right now for the Republican Party. The lady who served in that capacity did not refile. So it looks like there's going to be six votes. I'm not certain if they'll have a remedy for that by the time the vote is taken. But either way, you got to have four votes from that group of people. Lubbock County's vote will be cast by someone from District 83, the precinct chairman for the Republican Party, who live in District 83. You know, in Lubbock, we're a split between District 83 and District 84. Those precinct chairmen will come together and select someone to go cast the vote. It's kind of like our elector, I guess.
Right.
And they'll go and meet with that group. And so, yeah, it's a very interesting process. So even though I've been working on it for a couple weeks, I have not come out publicly because I really strongly felt that I owed it to the county chairman to talk with them first and let them know who I am and why I want to run and just get FaceTime with them, visit with them before I set
anything. That's a good idea. I mean, extending courtesy.
Yeah.
Rather than just blindsiding. But that's a good call. Now, I do have a question for you.
Sure.
All right, this is, you know, the speculation around this has been going on that this was a possibility for quite some time.
Right.
Laura and I were playing dominoes here in the studio one day, and we said this is how they're going to fall. Mm-hmm. And indeed they did. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really, you didn't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Which is how we did.
Well, you know, he does this, she's going to do this. But what actually made you or drove you to make the decision or said, hey, I want to do this? Because I know that you've done things in the past. Mm-hmm. And here in just a few minutes, we'll talk kind of about the Vita and the things that you've done with, you know, Phil Graham and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, why now and what really pushed you over the edge to say, hey, make a commitment? Because, you know, I know you guys, Elder Law Firm Nathan Ziegler and Associates, you guys are very, you know, into what you're doing, very immersed in what you're doing, very successful at what you're doing, specialized in what you're doing. Nobody else is doing what you're doing. Why?
Well, you're right. We are plenty busy generally. But I tell you what, it's something that, you know, of course, like you say, the speculation has been there for some time that this might happen. It had not been on my radar screen at all recently, however. So it's, in fact, just reading the news stories about Tech's search for a chancellor, somewhere in there, I felt like what was coming out of Texas Tech sounded like they weren't going to pick Bob Duncan. I felt like he was not their first pick for whatever reason. But so when the announcement came, I had not recently thought about it at all. that I would be interested in going to Austin and being involved in helping make policy is probably not a surprise to most people that know me. I've been around policy and politics and had a job, as you indicated, with Senator Graham articulating policy. I love public policy, and I love I believe ideas have consequences. And so when our policy is based on the right ideas, on things that are true, we get good policy, we get good outcomes. When we make policy based on bad ideas or ideas that don't actually work, that aren't actually true, even though they sound good, we get bad policy, we get bad outcomes. And so I'm passionate about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I know that sounds a little basic, but I'd love to talk more about what I mean by that. But that policy informed by the truth that life is because God made it and it's brilliant. And so every life has worth and we've got to protect it. And then that's the state's first job. If you don't have life, you don't have any other rights. But secondly, liberty, the power of liberty, in our personal lives, in business, and the power of free markets, the power of, when people have liberty, they make much better decisions about what to do with resources, what to do in their families, how to solve problems in their communities than governments do typically. And so I would love to go to Austin and generally vote, defend those principles. But I think we have to be more than a no vote in Austin. We got to go on offense, and that's why I'm running.
Right. Okay. Just before we hit the break, Sandra Ziegler announcing that she will seek Republican nomination for District 83, Texas House of Representatives. Sandra, you are going to make an official public announcement later today. Where, when?
No, this actually is my public announcement.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I've made the announcement. I'll be talking to a lot of different media outlets today.
Okay, well, I knew
so
that was
coming. So you heard it here first.
Okay. That's right.
All right, well, goody. We'll be back. Sandra Ziegler, Tom Collins, Lormack, 716. 722. This is Lubbock's First News. Got a nice morning in progress. Still a little bit sticky. Welcome back, Laura.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Glad to have you vertical and breathing.
Yeah,
you're
thanks.
On the right. You woke up on the right side of the dirt today.
I did. That's a good thing because a couple of days ago, I wasn't sure.
Yeah. In-house, Sandra Ziegler, she's announcing that she will seek the Republican nomination for District 83, Texas House of Representatives. And with the anticipation, Charles Perry is probably going to be running for Bob Duncan's Senate seat.
And that's not official yet.
Right.
But that's kind of the speculation. Mm-hmm. So that's why you've thrown your hat in the ring.
Yeah. He has said that he will be running for that. So mm-hmm. I would expect an announcement that he's removing himself from the ballot any day.
Okay. Well, he'll be off of one spot and back on another.
Right.
Now, anyway, Sandra, as far as why you want to represent District 83, what's mm-hmm. going to separate you from the rest of the pack? Because we know that there are five candidates in the
right.
field that are interested?
Right. Yes, I think there are five. I think that a district as red as District 83 needs to send a fighter to Austin, and we can send a fighter to Austin. We have the political cover here in the district. And what I mean by that is District 83 can send somebody to Austin who'll go out on a limb, who's willing to say the hard things, cast hard votes, and they have a good shot of being sent back. There are a lot of Republican districts around our state where that's just not true. And so when you have a district as conservative as ours, we can send somebody who's willing to go on offense and push the debate to the right. And we won't get all of what we want, but we'll get a lot more of what we want. And I think it'd be a missed opportunity if we don't do that. We have some good people in the race. We have some conservatives in the race. But I do not have professional considerations that will keep me from going out on a limb, from saying hard things and casting hard votes. I'm not beholden to anybody. I don't, my husband's the only owner of his firm. He has no partners that are going to pull him aside and say, okay, you need to rein that girl in. So
what kind of hard subjects and hard votes are you talking about?
Well, the first one that I'm talking about, and this is part of my announcement today, is that I will work to elect Scott Turner as Speaker of the House. Our current Speaker, Joe Strauss, is beholden to every Democrat in the chamber. And, you know, when we live in a state that has elected 95 Republicans and 55 Democrats to the House, I think we ought to be able to pick a speaker who's not beholden to every Democrat in the chamber. It's easier for Democrats to get legislation to the floor of the House for consideration than it is for a lot of Republicans. And I think that's wrong. I think we as Republicans can do better. And I've met with Scott Turner. I flew to Dallas to meet with him because while, you know, people I respect, like him and are supporting him. I have a great friend, Matt Schaefer, who I worked with Senator Graham, who's a state representative from Tyler in East Texas. He's backing Scott Turner strongly. I respect their opinions, but I wanted to meet with him eyeball to eyeball and get a feel for who he is and why he's running. And he really is someone who I believe can unite Republicans. I believe that he will be fair and give Republicans will know if they vote for him for Speaker that their legislation will get a fair hearing. But right now, like I said, it's easier for a Democrat to get legislation to the floor of the House than it is for a Republican, and that's got to change. And so we've got to have the courage to say that Scott Turner needs to be Speaker of the House.
Okay. As far as legislation and policy goes, what do you think are some of the more important issues that you feel like you need to get a hold of?
Well, number one for me is, I mean, I'm going to be a vote for protecting life. I'm going to be a vote for liberty, for protecting our liberty and trying to reclaim it from some areas where we've given it away in previous votes. But I would like to work on Medicaid reform. Medicaid, the Health and Human Services consumes 36.9% of our all funds budget right now. That is almost dead even with what we're spending on public education. We're spending 37% of the budget on public education. The problem is, you know, our population has been growing at a rate of between 1.6% and 2% a year in our state. The Health and Human Services budget is growing by 9% a year. And because of what we do in elder law and helping people that are needing to go into the nursing home, we see this demographic wave coming that the burden on the state is only going to grow, and it's unsustainable. We have got to change the rules of that program. We've got to get out from under the federal guidelines because most of those are federally mandated. We don't have a whole lot of say in Texas. There are some great conservative proposals to get a block grant so that we can structure our own program in Texas that is more, that introduces some market forces that, you know, helps people have some skin in the game so that even though it's still subsidized, they have a copay for certain services so that they have an incentive to comparison shop and care what the cost of things are. So,
wow. Copay for people on Medicaid?
Yes, across the spectrum. Right.
All right.
A lot of people might not be able to do that.
Well, it'd still be a subsidized program. It might be something like an HSA where they pay a tiny amount and the state pays some other things. But, yeah, we got to change that program or it's going to go broke.
All right. Sandra Ziegler in the House announcing candidacy and seeking the seat, District 83, Texas House of Representatives. We'll be back. KFYO 739 with Tom Collins, Laura Mack, and thanks for being along with us, Sandra Ziegler, this morning, announcing that she would like to be the nominee for District 83 Texas House of Representatives, which will be decided by the county chairs in what was, or originally we thought was 7 votes.
But now, it might just be 6.
Just be 6 because I guess the county chair in Borden County did not re-register or re-up, yes?
Right.
All right. We had been talking about, you know, kind of platform and things like that. We had been talking about Sandra and what she thought was one of the important issues. Mm-hmm. And there are several things, you know, right to life, liberty, and we'll get into the liberty thing in just a minute. Mm-hmm. But you were talking about reforming Medicaid now and you know, to where people have more skin in the individual skin in the game.
Right.
And reforming that system. Now, Your husband is an elder law attorney.
Right.
Elder law firm of Nathan Ziegler and Associates. Now, you know, in fact, when you say that you're looking at reducing the burden on the state, that actually, I would think, in the long run for you may create, you know, some scenarios where your husband's firm may have lesser opportunity.
Well, I suppose so. I mean, that's kind of like saying, you know, if we make the tax code simpler and easier to understand, then, you know, CPAs would have less work. So to some extent, you know, in our work as an elder law firm, we advise people on, you know, obviously basic estate planning and guardianship issues if those come up, but also on long-term care and what options are available to pay for long-term care. And so roughly two-thirds of the nursing home beds in Texas are paid for by Medicaid currently. And so that's one of the programs that we look at for people, and we have to know the rules in order to know what the rules say about their situation.
That doesn't mean you have to like them, though.
No, exactly. That's what I want to bring to the table is in working with families every day who are having to see how they're situated with regard to the rules of Medicaid. I've been able to learn some of the worst rules of Medicaid that have to change. They absolutely have to change. They're federally mandated for the most part. The structure of Medicaid is federally mandated to a large extent. The states have some ability to tailor it a little bit, but most of the major components are federally mandated. So I can bring that knowledge to the table to add fuel to the argument that we've got to be able to get a block grant for that program and be able to restructure it. And just, you know, in broad terms, Medicaid is really, it's a kind of a two-part program. There's services for the poor, and then there's services, technically, there's services for the poor all the way around, but there's the poor that aren't elderly, and then there's services for the elderly, a lot of which is the long-term care. The biggest cost driver there is the long-term care paid for by Medicaid. Both of those, you know, programs need to change, and there are good proposals by conservatives to do that. We have a whole group of people right now, though, who are needing long-term care services who it wasn't part of their life experience watching people go into a nursing home and need care there for a long time. They didn't watch that happen with their parents because they weren't living long enough then. So they didn't know to buy long-term care insurance. And so here they find themselves at a point where they need long-term care. Average cost of nursing home care in our area is, you know, well, it starts usually at about $4,500 and goes up. And for most people,
that would be a month.
A month. For most people, that's unsustainable. It's going to drain their savings really fast. And so we've got to figure out how to deal with that group of people. We don't want to throw people out on the street, so we've got to be compassionate toward that fact that they did not have health and long-term care insurance. They don't have it. They didn't know they needed to buy it. Now they can't buy it. They're too old and frail to buy long-term care insurance. But then we've got to restructure it going forward because it's not going to work. We have a demographic wave coming, you know, where we're going to have more and more people needing nursing home care, and we've got to change it.
Well, and I had another question about the long-term care aspect of this, because I do have that for myself because I'm diabetic,
and it's smart.
But the thing is it's based off a percentage only of the income that you have or at we're earning. So if you can't afford $4,500 now and you still didn't save, you know, that even makes it more critical. Mm-hmm. Yes or no?
To have long-term care insurance.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's all different kinds of plans out there, but, yeah, it's absolutely critical for us in this day and time. But when we're talking about not the nursing home services, but Medicaid for the poor, for younger folks, the same thing that's driving costs throughout our healthcare system is driving costs in Medicaid. And that is that people are removed from the buying decision. You know, people have to have some skin in the game. And what I mean by that is they've got to feel it when those decisions are made to buy services. So let's introduce a copay, because if you don't have any copay in something, you don't care how much it costs. You don't care if that MRI costs $500 or $5,000.
Right.
And that's the overriding problem throughout the whole system. So I'd like to work on that. Charles Perry started working on that, has done a lot of heavy lifting to try to get that done, and I want to join him in that.
All right, we're going to hit the break. We'll be back one more segment. I want to get back on individual liberty and see what your thoughts are on that. 7:45. KFYO News Talk 790 right now, 7:49 with Tom and Laura. This is Lubbock's First News. Sandra Ziegler announcing she will seek the Republican nomination for District 83 to Texas House of Representatives. And before you came out with the announcement, you went out and actually contacted all of the county chair people to visit with them before you did.
Yep. I had a chance to sit down with every one of them and visit with them about my heart, my head, why I'm running, what I'd like to do, and it was great meetings all the way around.
Okay. One of the issues that you brought up was, you know, liberty, referring to individual liberty. You know, what's your viewpoint on that, and how does that trickle down to the family?
Well, I think America's great because it's founded on the truths that God gave us life and that he gave us liberty. And those are so powerful, and I think the power of them has is somewhat lost on a new generation. And so, you know, life to me is brilliant, not just because it exists, but because God made it, and, you know, we're made in his image. And as such, there's brilliance in each person and worth, and we have to protect that. And liberty is so brilliant to me because when you're free to fail, then you're free to grow and truly succeed. When you don't ask government to be everything for you and do everything for you and give everything to you, then, you know, there's a lot wider space for ingenuity, for personal growth. The marketplace is a lot greater, better allocator of resources and picker of winner and losers than the government could ever be. You know, you spending your own money out of your own pocket that you had to earn by your own sweat on your own family, in your own community, actually creates jobs. And it's that decision's informed by 1,000 points of information and inputs right there that 12 guys sitting in a musty room in Austin don't have. And
yeah, so, I get it, because in my in my other business, I operate in a very tight niche. And nobody else is thinking about these things. As a matter of fact, I'm in a niche where people that are in my business category actually go, they discount it and they go, oh, we don't want to do that.
Right.
You know, because it's too much work. You know, they don't want to provide excellence in service. They want to do it fast and cheap. You know, and well, you know, well, hey, we're cheaper than everybody else. You don't, you know, what do you expect?
You want us to be nice to you on top of that? Sorry.
No, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have a great appreciation for it. But, hey, thanks for joining us and sharing your thoughts. And, you know, I would say congratulations at the poll, but there is not going to be a poll.
It's not really a poll yet.
No, it really isn't. You know, four people are going to make that decision. And I want to be a fighter in Austin for this district, but I also want to go on offense in the court of public opinion and talk about life and liberty. And so I'd love to get the job, and we need a new Speaker of the House.
Yeah, you know what's interesting to me, Laura, is that if there were seven, you needed four votes. And if there are only six, you need four votes.
Right.
You know, numerically, that wouldn't happen anywhere else, probably, in any other scenario. But anyway, good luck to you, and thanks. Appreciate you joining us.
Thanks so much.
Have a great day. 7:52.